Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
My parents went pretty far to, like, fake us out with the Easter Bunny, like, slamming doors, pretending, you know, like...
Wait, what's let's back up. Slamming doors like
Benicula? Like pretending like, oh, we just missed him. He was hiding eggs.
Oh,
okay.
Press, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. From KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Guy Marzorati, in for Scott Schaefer. And today on The Breakdown, Tamika Moss, after stints at City Hall in both San Francisco and Oakland and in the nonprofit sector, she's been picked by Governor Gavin Newsom to be the top housing official in the state of California.
Moss has spent her career trying to chip away at the state's homelessness crisis, a role she says requires infinite hope. Now her official title is Secretary of the Business Consumer Services and Housing Agency. Tamika Moss, welcome to The Breakdown.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we are very glad to have you. And it's a big title, a lot of things under business, consumer services, and housing. But I do think we want to drill down on that last bit, housing, because it is such an important part of what's happening in California and really the governor's potential legacy. So I guess big picture, how do you see the moment we're in terms of the state's efforts to reduce the number of Californians experiencing homelessness? You know, we've had record amounts of money spent, a governor who really believes that the state has a place in this debate, but still more than, I think, 180,000 estimated to be unhoused. And that's up 6% from the last count.
Yeah, it's a stark reality, given how much incredible work is happening both in local communities every single day, all the way up to state government. And so I think this time is sort of signaling to us that homelessness and housing insecurity is not just about the individuals who are experiencing it. It's actually about some of the systems that are perpetuating the conditions that keep homelessness in place in the first place. And so when I think about how for every person we house in the Bay Area, for example, three more people become homeless during the same period of time, that signals to me that there's something much more significant going on around the cost of housing, around stagnant incomes, which to me equals kind of a math problem, that the Bay Area and the state of California, frankly, is a really expensive place. And unless we figure out both how to bring down the cost of housing and how to increase folks' household incomes and earnings, then I think we're going to continue to see this structural challenge. And so we are doing things every day to disrupt the housing crisis for individuals. We know how to do that. There are data-informed practices about how to do that, but we need to be able to do it to scale, and we need the resources and strategies that are consistent across the state for us to really have the progress that the public expects.
And this is an issue, reducing homelessness, that you've worked at kind of across levels. You've worked in the nonprofit sector, as we mentioned, at City Hall in San Francisco and in Oakland. What do you see about this job that perhaps you couldn't do elsewhere?
It's a great question. I feel like the biggest difference in this role is the scale. You know, we are talking about having the purview of the state infrastructure, which, you know, Marisa, you talked about 180 plus thousand folks who experience homelessness on any given night. That is a state challenge. The work I had been doing at the local level, both in San Francisco and Oakland, and at the regional level, is just magnified at that level. So what I'm encouraged by, though, is that the solutions are the same. And so we don't need to come up with new ideas necessarily of how to solve this crisis. I feel like I get that question every day. Tamika, if you had a magic wand, you know, what would you do? Well, the fact of the matter is there's no one silver bullet. We have to be doing concurrent things at the same time, preventing homelessness where we can, providing interim housing supports for people who are currently outdoors, and building a ton more affordable housing, permanently affordable housing for people who are experiencing poverty and homelessness. So I think it's not about the scale is not intimidating to me. It's just a challenge about how do we ensure that we, at all levels of government, all of us are doing our part to get to that scale.
I mean, that makes me wonder then, because I think throughout your career, you've talked really openly about the things you're laying out here, that these are not challenges that like one agency or one policy push could fix, right? We could build housing and we would still have people struggling with mental health and substance abuse, poverty. I guess I wonder, like, then within this role, do you see that as helping push those types of broader policies with the governor and maybe even publicly? I mean, I'm thinking about things like rental assistance, eviction protection, even higher wages for workers. Like, those are all sort of areas that you have talked a lot about in the past.
Absolutely. And this is an example of when we have, as I said, all stakeholders coming to the table to do their part. So during the pandemic, we had the federal government really lean in across this country to ensure that certainly our most vulnerable residents were not, you know, in jeopardy of health impacts. But also, the state of California received a ton of resources to ensure that rental assistance was provided across the state, the emergency rental assistance program that kept millions and millions of people in their home. And it actually worked the way we needed it to, which targeted folks who were most at risk of losing their homes during the pandemic. During the pandemic, the Project Room Key and Home Key provided interim housing options in the hotels and motels in the early days, and then Home Key preserving those homes permanently. So, you know, I think it is recognizing that every level of government has a role to play. I think over the last 20 to 30 years, the federal government has really disinvested in housing. And we've had to see our local communities try to move bonds forward, try to figure out how to stretch their local dollars to cover the housing costs, when in 2012, redevelopment was abolished, which was a tool that the state, that local jurisdictions use to develop affordable housing. So I feel like the toolbox has gotten a little shaky, and we aren't necessarily activating everything at our disposal to really get to the scale of the challenge. So it's not that we're not doing our part. It's just that I think we aren't doing it with the sense of urgency that is required, and we're not doing it collaboratively, right? There's a lot of fragmentation in how housing and homelessness is done across the state, and we're really trying to work on alignment, coordination, and frankly, innovative partnerships that's going to help us push the envelope into what's really possible here.
So would you see yourself like out there, like publicly lobbying for a bill or a piece of legislation? Or is that more like, you know, you get access to the governor because you're working for him. You're one of his secretaries.
I am. I mean, we certainly, legislation is a tool in the toolbox. We don't necessarily advocate for specific legislation. Okay. But what we want to do is create policies and responses that actually help Californians. And if we need legislation to do that, then we're going to use that. That's exactly right. We're going to use that tool. But, you know, my aim is really making sure that when we do things at the state level, that the people on the ground feel it. We are. I know this governor is committed to the issues of homelessness and housing and all of the other issues that we deal with as a state. But I want folks to know that the state is there for them, that we are not this, you know, untouchable bureaucracy that's just, you know, lamenting about the problem. We want to be much more connected to community.
A moment ago, you were talking about the pandemic as kind of a watershed moment for the fight to reduce homelessness, for the fight to reduce poverty. You mentioned things like eviction protection. There's also, you know, it became a lot easier to get past some public input, get homeless housing built on the federal level. We saw the child tax credit. Where do you see us backsliding now, 4 years later?
Well, sadly, a lot of the things that we saw put forward during the pandemic were treated as emergency responses to a global pandemic. But I would contend that we have been in a crisis epidemic of homelessness and housing insecurity for decades here in the state of California. Yet we've treated it as a slow burn, like maintenance and Band-Aids, right? And so rather than asking the question, do we have the right solutions and strategies that can solve the problem? We've just been trying to maintain the challenge. And I think the backsliding came when those resources went away and communities are now starting to see record level evictions. Folks are having a really hard time with inflation paying their rent again, ensuring that folks' incomes are keeping up with the cost of living. So the child tax care credit stat is one of the most sobering statistics for me. When child poverty was reduced by 40% during the pandemic, just like that, in less than 2 years. So that signals to me that we actually know what the policies are. But if we go back to the status quo, what are we really committing to? Yeah. So that's a question I'm really grappling with in my new role.
And arguably, we have even more challenges coming out of pandemic with all of the myriad of ways that people are still kind of dealing with the fallout.
Because, you know, in our world, the pandemic was just a mirror. Yeah. It was a reflection of what we already knew. The impacts of brown, black and indigenous communities in terms of the health disparities, all of the things that we know show up in our communities was just on display for more folks to see.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with California's Business Consumer Services and Housing Agency Secretary Tamika Moss. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Guy Marzorati. Our guest today is California's top housing official, Tamika Moss. She heads the Business Consumer Services and Housing Agency. We'll get
How
back.
Did housing get to be last on that
I
list?
I know, right? And business first? I mean, I don't know. But...
You know, I'm 5 weeks into the job, friend. So I'm inheriting a title, but I do think... Certainly, housing and homelessness are two of our society's most compelling challenges. But our business and consumer services work is quite extraordinary. We license almost everybody in the yeah. state. We really care about consumer protection. So it's been really fun to dig into that side of the portfolio and understand how many lives we touch of people in California.
Yeah,
it's quite
totally
amazing.
Different than a lot of the work.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to go back a little bit further to your childhood, how you grew up. I know you've talked a lot in the past about crediting your grandmother for being the person who set you on a path of public service. Tell us about her. Did she raise you or was she just a big influence on your childhood?
She raised my sisters and I.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sisters?
Yes.
How many?
I have three sisters.
Okay.
But I was also raised with my grandmother's two kids and my aunties. So we all grew up as sisters in the same household.
Where was that?
And was in the Bay Area?
In Ohio.
In Ohio.
Yes. That explains Wesleyan. Okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
So yeah, what was your childhood like? That is a lot of children in one house, a lot of girls, it sounds like.
I swear all we do is girls in my family. I have like one cousin who's a boy.
It's
one
like,
nephew.
I'm high, I'm over here.
No, strong maternal lines. So I grew up in rural Ohio, as a matter of fact, on a farm about 45 minutes east of Cleveland. And so I often say Ohio's a great place to be from. I don't need to live there again, but I think it made me who I am. It sort of grounds me in my Midwestern roots and values. And both of my parents passed away by the time I was four. So my grandmother, my mom's mom, raised my sisters and I. And, you know, seeing that selfless act in many ways was sort of testimony to who she was as a person, but also what is required of helping your family, helping your community, and stepping up. was something I learned from her.
And what was your path here to California?
Ooh, this is a circuitous one. But love got me here. I was living in Colorado for a stint and met my wife at a soccer tournament in Portland, Oregon. And we did the long distance thing, and one of us needed to move if we were going to make it work. And I came to California 21 years ago.
All right, I got two follow-up questions to that.
Yeah.
Were you out at that time, and were you playing soccer?
I was. I was out, and I was a spectator at
okay.
that time.
Okay.
But I did come to California and join the rec league. So
nice.
I was a goalie, and I played defense for a bit.
All right. Well, yeah. You ended up also going to Golden Gate University for your master's degree. At that point, were you already interested in the kind of public service work that you've now made your career? Or like how did that kind of path lay out?
It's a great question. I actually, when I was living in Colorado, I was working. I'd done some social work and had started working in domestic violence. So I was working with survivors of domestic violence and their kids, mm-hmm. trying to figure out how to help them if they were going to stay with their partners, how to keep those folks safe. And so I began my work in direct service many years ago. And so when I came to California, my first job was at the Tenderloin Neighborhood Development Corporation as social worker. And it was the first time that I got exposed to housing and what it was like to support people in community in the place where they lived. And frankly, what it was like when they didn't have a place to live. And so that was sort of the beginning of my journey into the both public policy and understanding the relationship between how people are actually living and the systems that govern that experience. And how do we make those two things talk to each other and make them more coherent and responsible for how people live?
It's a lot of heavy work on a day-to-day basis. How did you deal with that as a parent? How do you, you know, talk about these kind of issues with your daughter?
You know, I have to say it is it's sobering work. I will say I people often say you're doing God's work, and I was like, I'm doing my part in helping the human condition have much more equality, equity, access, right? And so to me, I talk about it in the way that I would want to be treated. When my daughter and I are having conversations about the work, a lot of what she says to me is self-care. You mm-hmm. give so much of yourself, you got to keep some of it for yourself. But what it really means to me is I'm here for a purpose, and I really feel strongly that if I have so much access, privilege, and opportunity, I want everybody to have it. I want my daughter to have it. I want my family to have it. But I also want my community to have it. And so I've really, it hasn't felt like work because it feels like the right thing to do. And that's kind of why I do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Guy Marzoretti. Our guest today is the Secretary of the Business, Consumer Services and Housing Agency, Tamika Moss. So, you know, one of the things kind of back to the news that we have been seeing lately is a kind of triaging at the local level of like, what do we tackle first? Is it permanent housing? Is it short-term housing? Is it homeless prevention? Is it, you know, emergency housing to just get people off the streets? And I think a lot of mayors are feeling the pressure to just make it look better. How do you think about this now in your new job in terms of like what that balance should be and how you all can assist these cities and counties in deciding how to make those tough decisions?
It's another great question. And I get it. People are frustrated. You know, this is not a new challenge. It's a worsening challenge, but it is not new for many communities across the state of California. And in my previous role, I started an organization called All Home, which was focused on regional solutions to address the homelessness and housing crisis. And one of the things that we did at All Home was we brought stakeholders together across all nine counties, business leaders, philanthropy, people with lived experience, government partners, to really come together to talk about how do we collectively bring our skills and assets to the table to come up with a set of solutions that can really work in reducing particularly unsheltered homelessness. And to answer your specific question, it actually takes all of those interventions. You know, one of the breakthroughs of that work was that we recognized that we've been operating in a scarcity mentality. There have not necessarily been enough resources for communities to tackle this issue at scale. So folks have to make really hard decisions about permanent housing investments versus interim and shelter versus prevention. And what we realized was we actually need to be making concurrent investments at the same time in preventing folks from experiencing homelessness, getting folks indoors as quickly as possible so that they can heal and stabilize, and keeping that permanent housing pipeline going. Unless we shift our work toward those concurrent investments, we're never going to have the flow, the need, we're never going to be able to get to where people need us and provide a responsive system.
And we're in a moment of budget cutbacks. Mm-hmm.
I understand. And look, I'm not saying it's easy. That's why we have to get super creative about what can we do to create efficiencies and effectiveness using data, using evidence in how we do business today, so that resources are going to come back. This is not a permanent state. And so when resources do come, are we ready to deliver those resources in a way that the community can see immediate results?
Well, also on the interim housing piece, I wonder if you think the bar for success is too high. I mean, when we're talking about things like Home Key, converting motels, tiny homes, I think the current paradigm is, okay, how quickly are people moving from those into an affordable apartment? Is it time to maybe move the goalposts and think maybe someone being in those places for 5 years, 10 years is off the streets and a success?
You know, I think it's an interesting question because it's exactly what you said. It's a paradigm shift. We have treated a one bedroom, two bedroom studio apartment as the traditional housing model, and everybody should be or buying
or
your own home.
Fence,
exactly.
Yeah.
Those two extremes. And I think we have to get a lot more real about what kind of housing options are truly available for folks. A lot of the interim housing that I've been seeing across the state has a life. It's durable. It's
private bathrooms.
Private bathrooms. There are kitchens. There are public spaces.
Better than a lot of these SROs that people have lived in for decades.
For decades. And so I do think it requires us to think differently about what kind of permanent options do people really look for. A lot of folks who are coming off the street, when they get the key to their first interim or permanent home, it doesn't feel that different to them in terms of the quality of the housing itself. They feel like they are off the streets, they are less vulnerable, they're somewhere safe, and they can start restoring their lives. And so I think you're right, opening up the housing types, opening up how long it takes to build a unit of housing and how much it costs. Those two things are prohibitive to building enough of the housing we need across the state fast enough.
Do you have any specifics? I just want to push you on this idea of like efficiencies and you know, doing more with less or with what we have now. Is there anything, I know you've only been on the job 5 weeks, but you've identified, because I feel like that's a really like popular buzzword across the political spectrum, often on the right, right? This idea that like government is just inefficient and we just have to figure out those things. But I don't know, have you found anything yet that you're like, oh, okay, that's a way we can tweak this and do it better?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So housing and community development is under my agency. And last year, a bill was passed to require the housing funding programs to actually coordinate around a singular application. So that when folks get funding for one program and they might get funding for another program, they're not doing that at two different times. That's an aligned and coordinated process. And that's across not just the Housing and Community Development Department. It's across California Housing Finance Agency, which is also under BCSH. And so I think that there are some examples of streamlining and efficiencies in how we administer the things that we can control.
To be legislation?
I don't know if it needed to be.
It is.
It is. How about that? It is. And it's, you know, part of what I'm excited about is encouraging my team to do it faster. We aren't required to have a report on that piece of legislation until the end of 2026. We are moving faster because people need to know that we can develop, we can deliver housing much more quickly than we do today.
Yeah. Well, the administration got a big win last week when Proposition 1 was passed by voters after weeks of vote counting. This was an effort to build more residential treatment facilities, fund more supportive housing. But it was really close. It was a really close result despite a lot of resources on the yes side. And I'm wondering how that frames your thinking about going forward. You know, the budget is tight. I think there was a lot of hope both at the state level and at the regional level here in the Bay Area. Let's go to voters in November and ask them if we can borrow more money for all the stuff that we've been talking about today. How does the result of Prop 1 change that thinking?
You know, I think it just reinforces the sense of urgency that I mentioned earlier. The governor is about results and about outcomes. And I think what we as his executive cabinet need to do is guide our departments and agencies toward outcomes. And guess what? It's not just the state. We have to be in partnership with our local jurisdictions, our cities and our counties about outcomes. And I know it's difficult to organize your homelessness response around outcomes. Most of the time, it's just a reactive sort of system. It's really difficult to say, you know what, with these resources, we need an X percentage of reduction in unsheltered homelessness. But that is what is required. The voters are tired of hearing that we have good intentions. They want to see action. And I think the Prop 1 result is a rally cry for all of us to really act on that sense of urgency and deliver on results.
So, I mean, there's an ongoing effort here in the Bay Area to do a regional housing bond. I know Assemblymember Buffy Wicks is working on a statewide housing bond. What's your take on those two paths?
Well, prior to stepping into this appointment, I was definitely working on the regional housing bond. I think it's critical for the Bay Area Housing Financing Agency, or BAFA, to move that forward. It could generate billions of dollars and unlock more than 45,000 units of housing over an 8-year period. I mean, we have to create pathways for more resources that get those units built. And so I think that that's a really important tool. And, you know, we also were working on lowering the voter threshold for housing bonds to a simple majority. I think tools like that help create that sense of urgency in local jurisdictions and gives them the resources they need.
All right. Last question. What do you say to people who feel hopeless about all of this? You've laid out a lot of the challenges and opportunities, but it is big. And, you know, you're one person.
I am one person, but I have an incredible, I have 7,000 employees under my leadership who are doing their best work every single day. But what I say to people when they feel hopeless is, we have actually never seen a California where homelessness is rare, brief, and one time. And so it's really difficult for people to believe us when we say it is possible, because it's hard to believe what you can't see. But I have had the great fortune of seeing over the last 20 years of my career, thousands and thousands of people move from the streets into housing, reconnect with family, get back on their feet when they've had a job loss or a health emergency, you know, deal with their behavioral health issues if that's what's going on for them. So I have full faith that it is possible to make this issue rare, brief, and one time. But the fact of the matter is, if we're only dealing with it on an individual level and not a systems level, then we're never going to get there. So I think we have to be very honest with ourselves about what are those systems we need to change and how quickly can we do it.
All right. Tamika Moss, she is Secretary of the Business, Consumer Services, and Housing Agency. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. It was fun.
That is a wrap for Thursday, March 28th. Political Breakdown's a production of KQED.
Our engineer today is Christopher Beal. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. I'm Guy Marzorati.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Scott Schaefer will be back next week with us. We'll see you next time.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.